Good evening, friends. Welcome to Valley Writers Read, a program where only the folks from our own San Joaquin Valley get to read their literary prose. And tonight, a story from an author who lives up in the mountains, right up on the way to Yosemite in the town of Coarse Gold. Her name is Evelyn O'Lang. And you know what? Evelyn has set her story pretty much right up there in the mountains as well. She's entitled it, Welcome Home. Here she is to read it for us. Evelyn O'Lang, Welcome Home.
Ashes to ash and fun to faggot. We know Major Tom's a junkie, strung out in heaven's high, hitting at all-time low.
Welcome Home. The chocolate lab dashed toward Juliet, tail wagging like a flag, dirt flying behind him. He collapsed at her feet, rolled on his back, and waited for her to scratch his belly. « Salut toi, » Juliet said. « Où t'étais passé, dis-moi ?» Bowie cocked his head as if in deep reflection. Juliet laughed, and the dog barked one joyful bark. « Même en anglais, tu ne me le dirais pas, » she added. Bowie cocked his head on the other side. I said, even in English, you would not tell me where you went. Juliet stroked the dog's head. Come on now, I need some iced tea. Bowie leaped to his paws and matched his pace to Juliet's. Side by side, she and the dog trotted until they reached the tiled terrace with a view of the Sierras. On Sunday, we'll go for a hike in the forest, Juliet said, taking in the mountains, blue like a pair of faded jeans. Bowie spied a squirrel, and distracted, he raced away. Juliet sighed. It seemed that most of the time she talked to herself. Entering the house, she took off her work boots and socks. Her bare feet on the cold limestone tiles instantly cooled her entire body. She opened the fridge and grabbed the neck of an iced tea bottle. Taking a large swig, she switched on the Bose system and the haunting tune of Ashes to Ashes filled the living room. As if on cue, Bowie, who had followed her inside, wagged his tail in rhythm to the music. Connoisseur, Juliet said, you deserve your name. Together, they flopped onto the couch. David Bowie's voice cut through the quietness of the house and the late afternoon peace. Craning a neck, Juliet peeked out through the bay window. Two more hours of work, and she could make a significant dent in the pile of wood she had to cut for the winter. But now that her body had cooled off and her throat no longer felt lined with thick cotton, her eyelids grew heavy, and she was tempted to stay inside, take a nap, and call it a day. But if Juliet had learned one thing when grief gnawed at her, it was the value of keeping her word. Even though nobody ever checked on her, she had to respect the deal she made with herself 10 years ago. She must go on, every day, one morning at a time, one chore at a time, until physical exhaustion allowed a few hours of sleep. There was just no other way to live. So Juliet pushed a tired body up, jolting Bowie, who, in a pure dog reflex, bounced up and tagged along. Even with heat trapped under the porch, the warmth of the sun had diminished. Fall would arrive soon. As she slipped on her socks and boots, Juliet heard the distant yet distinct rumbling of a motor. Bowie perked his ears and stood alert, posting himself between Juliet and the driveway. It's okay, big dog, Juliet said, just a pickup truck struggling uphill. At the sound of Juliet's voice, Bowie turned toward her, but he kept his ears and tail up, paws ready to pounce on an invisible prey. Juliette was tying her laces when the roaring of the motor got closer. She looked up. The sun had begun its slow descent behind the hills. Blinded by the glare, she shaded her eyes. A dusty green Toyota Tacoma was zipping down the driveway. In the 3 years since she moved to the Sierra, Juliette had never seen a soul on the land, although the possibility of meeting new people had occasionally brushed her mind. She feared the moment when they might become friends. In the condo she rented in San Francisco, her relationships with neighbors had remained civil and courteous. She had lunch and occasional dinners with colleagues from work, other computer geeks like herself, though she usually kept to herself and lived alone. That was not out of the ordinary in the driven Silicon Valley, and nobody questioned her lifestyle. Now, away from the city, from the fast pace of the Bay Area, and settled in the cabin, her solitude was total. She drove to the small nearby town once a week. A few faces became familiar, but she had never engaged in any serious conversation with anyone. She had quickly noticed the discreet yet unmistakable way people looked at her, and had wondered if they pitied her, a woman still young, alone, with only a dog for companion. Grief, she realized, doesn't suit humans, and everyone takes off at its sight, as if it was a contagious disease. When she had gassed up a jeep, done a grocery shopping, and picked up a mail, she always drove home. She had succeeded at keeping people at bay, and also managed to convince herself that she would only find solace from grief in seclusion. The Tacoma came to a halt, and Bowie jumped from the terrace. "Bowie," Juliette called, "ici!" But the lab didn't obey and raced to the truck. They say to trust the dog's instinct, Juliette thought. She followed Bowie, and as she approached the truck, heard a young female voice. "Hey, big dog, I need help. Is there anyone living here?" The voice held panic, and Juliette's heart rose to her throat. She took it the front bumper of the vehicle, hanging low, and the broken right headlight. Other than that, the Tacoma was in no way different from the local pickup trucks. A pair of leather boots, so dusty Juliette couldn't distinguish the color, emerged from the driver's seat. Above the boots, a pair of faded Levi's. Then, the slender bust of a girl in a paisley shirt and a large-brimmed cowboy hat appeared. The girl pushed her hat back. Strands of chestnut hair framed a sun-kissed face. Juliette stepped away. Since she fled the city, she felt uneasy near other people. "I'm in trouble. Can you help me?" the girl said, avoiding Juliette's eyes. Juliette noted the softness of the voice, confirming the girl's young age. Was she even allowed to drive? Juliette knew that country and mountain folks teach their kids how to drive earlier than city people do. But the more she watched, the younger she found this unexpected visitor to be. She waited for the girl to explain what she was doing here, but she remained silent, stroking Bowie's chocolate coat. Encouraged, the dog stepped closer and sniffed her in the way dogs assess strangers who cross their territory. Juliette reached for his collar, but the girl waved her away, instead resting her hand on top of Bowie's head. The dog sat at her feet. For this reason, and because the girl had still not looked at her, Juliette cleared her throat. "How can I help you?" she asked. She hadn't said these words to anyone in a long time. The girl tucked her hands in the front pockets of her Levi's and dug her heels into the ground, tipping her body backwards. "I think I killed someone," she said, a young voice tinted with a mix of fright and candor. Shock spread through Juliette's body. The sun, although low on the horizon, fell directly on her back, but she hugged her shirt close to her chest to keep out the cold wave that washed over her. "What happened?" she asked, fearful of the answer. Juliette heard the trembling in her own voice, and Bowie seemed to smell a fear before she reached for him. She was running on adrenaline, and when she brought her hand on top of his head to steady herself, it was indeed sweaty and shaky. The dog got closer, sending her a message of comfort, and Juliette held onto a handful of flesh gathered around Bowie's neck. She knew she should call 911 right away, but a sob caught in the girl's voice. "It was an accident," she said. Her words hung in the air like clouds heavy with rain. She leaned against the door of the Tacoma as if she couldn't stand on her own. "Come on," Juliette said. She grabbed the girl's elbow and led her to a bench. 3 years ago, when she understood that isolation could possibly save her, Juliette bought park benches at antique stores and displayed them under favorite trees. Each tree and bench had a purpose. She read under the oak tree, ate lunch under the crepe myrtle, and had dinner under the pine tree. There was only one tree she kept for days, when she knew, even before getting out of bed, that it would be a day flooded with infinite sadness. The willow tree was a sorrow tree, where she hid and waited. She would sometimes stay there the entire day, until a grief reached numbness. Agony only withdrew when it had plod restlessly through a sullen body. "Sit down," Juliette ordered when they reached the willow tree. The girl obeyed. Bowie jumped up beside her. The girl kept her head down, and Bowie nuzzled her in an attempt to play or at least communicate. Juliette remembered how the puppy she had found in a shelter in Santa Clara County had been essential to her life when she thought she was going crazy. "Bon chien," Juliette whispered, grateful for the dog's comforting presence. Bowie dug his nose into her thigh several times, his way of telling her he was happy to be a good dog, and that despite the girl whom he obviously liked, Juliette was still his favorite person in the world. The girl looked up for the first time. Her eyes, green as faded beach glass, had filled with tears. Bowie curled at her feet. "This is Bowie," Juliette said. "I saw his tag," the girl said. "I'm Juliette." The girl paused for the briefest second. "Natasha," she said. She had pale under her tan, as if ready to collapse. Juliette thought that Natasha was maybe not her real name. "But why would I be the only one living with secrets?" she thought. "Natasha," she asked, "what happened?" "I was driving and checking my phone." Natasha shifted her eyes to the mountains, pink and blue under the sunset. "There is no service where I live, and messages were finally downloading. I was listening to my voicemail, and I must have swerved, because the next thing I knew, there was a car. I didn't brake soon enough, and I hit the car." She took her hat off. Fear lined her forehead. "I didn't want it to happen," she added. "I'm sure you did not," Juliette said, a head filling with horrific pictures created by Natasha's words. She sat beside her. Natasha ran one finger along the brim of her hat. "Round and round like thoughts looping in a brain," thought Juliette. "Then what did you do?" she asked. Natasha shrugged. "Have you called anyone for help?" Juliette asked. Natasha shook her head. "I'm scared." "Your parents?" Natasha jumped up. "No way." "Hit and run," Juliette realized with a shiver. At least, Natasha didn't seem to be under the influence. "Did anyone witness the accident?" she asked. "Nobody was there." Night unfolded, and the solar-powered lamps glowed along the driveway. "We should call the police," Juliette said. "Please." Natasha's voice was a prayer in the yard. "We can't leave someone hurt on the side of the road." Juliette realized she was acting as if she was involved in the accident. "Would you come with me?" Natasha searched for Juliette's eyes. "There is no one else I can ask." Juliette stood up. "I'll get my keys." When she came back, Natasha and Bowie had settled in the jeep. Bowie had given up the passenger seat. Juliette backed away from the garage, her knuckles white as she squeezed the steering wheel to keep her hand steady. She switched on the high beams. The car roared away, leaving behind a thin cloud of dirt. In another life, many had said Juliette would never be able to do such simple things anymore. She never told them that she had considered not even trying. And yet, here she was, driving in the dark, the Jeep she exchanged for the Mini Cooper she had driven in the city. A girl she didn't know an hour ago sat beside her. Someone had been hurt and had possibly died. Only Bowie was a familiar figure, and the dog, as if he understood her thoughts, tugged on his sleeve. Darkness and silence wrapped around the car. Until 3 years ago, Juliette would not have believed that life was possible in such a remote place. But what neither excessive work nor the fast-paced city could provide the anesthesia she craved, she found only one way to escape the ghost of her past. She fled once more. She didn't want to return to that period of her life, and she glanced toward Natasha. "Where do you live?" she asked. 30 miles north of town." Town was 20 miles north from Juliette's. If Natasha lived further north, she had driven at least 50 miles. Where was she going when she hit the car? She obviously preferred Juliette's support to calling her parents. It made Juliette uncomfortable, yet her heart swelled in a way she had forgotten it could at the realization she was helping another human being. Juliette's shoulders and neck tensed under the nervous pressure and the attention she gave to the road. At night, it was hard to miss the potholes that winter rain and snow hollowed out. The painting of the median and emergency lane had faded, and no street lamps provided guidance. Less than a second of inattention, and anyone could lose control and tumble into the ravine. "It's so dark," Natasha whispered as she leaned toward the windshield. They drove for 5 more minutes before she shouted for Juliette to stop. "We just passed it." Juliette made a U-turn. A tire scrunched on the loose gravel of the shoulder as she strained to see a car. Perhaps Natasha mistook one spot for another, she thought. Then she caught sight of a dark shape on the side of the road. "Is this it?" she asked. "Yes." Natasha's voice was only a murmur. Juliette stopped the engine. Natasha didn't move. "She can get out of the car," Juliette realized. She opened the door and shivered in the crispness of the night. Bowie stirred in the back and brought his nose to the window. "Viens," Juliette told him. "I should have brought a flashlight," she thought, as she stepped carefully through the short dry grass. Her heart pummeled the chest, and fear clawed at her throat while she made her way to the wrecked car, Bowie on her heels. The front bumper was pushed in, the driver's door caved in, the windshield smashed. The car was totaled, but Juliette saw that it was a black Honda Accord. Bowie leaned his paws against the car. Juliette tried to open the doors and trunk. All were locked. She peeked inside. The car was empty. According to Natasha's story, the accident happened about 2 hours ago. The police would still be here if it had been reported, Juliette assumed. This was good news. On the other hand, she thought, if the driver wasn't seriously injured, he probably saw the Tacoma, and perhaps even Natasha. He would tell the police that she didn't stop to check on him. Maybe, she hoped against all hope, Natasha, being so young, could be forgiven. It only made sense that she panicked and left the accident scene to get help. Careful to avoid the shards of glass littering the ground, Juliette squatted to read the license number and noticed it was an out-of-state plate. She searched a pocket for a piece of paper, found a gas receipt, and scribbled down the number. Flooded with compassion for Natasha, but also confused and anxious, Juliette glanced at the sky, searching for a star. Some guidance on such a night would be a gift. But it was too early for stars. and the sky remained as dark as her worried thoughts. Bowie nuzzled Juliet's leg until she noticed him. "D'accord," she said. "Allons-y." The dog led the way to the jeep. Inside the car, Natasha was resting against the seat, her eyes so tightly closed that Juliet thought she might be asleep. But she turned her head at the sound of the door. "Is he?" she asked, letting her unfinished sentence hang between them. "The car is empty," Juliet said, pushing the key in the ignition. Natasha slammed her hand to her mouth. Her eyes widened with terror. In an instinctive gesture, Juliet gave Natasha's arm a squeeze for reassurance and understanding. Bowie stirred in the back seat and poked his nose between them. Natasha reached for his head and smoothed the short fur that grew between the dog's eyes. "Where did he go?" she whispered. Juliet shook her head and dropped her hand to her side. "Do you think he was not seriously hurt?" Natasha asked. "We don't know if the driver is a he or she. Maybe someone drove by and gave him a ride," Natasha went on, ignoring Juliet. "That's good, then." "If only she's right," Juliet thought. She glanced again at the car flipped on the side. It belonged in a junkyard. "Even if the driver is okay, we have to call the police," Juliet said. "What you did is called a hit and run. There are consequences. Do you understand?" Natasha's eyes filled with fear. "I don't want to do it alone," she whispered. "Let me drive you home. Your parents should know. They must wonder where you are and be terribly worried." "No!" Natasha bolted from the car and took off. In an instant, the night swallowed her. Juliet jumped out. "Natasha, come back!" Bowie barked once. "Go get her," Juliet ordered. The dog leaped from the back seat and sprinted into the dark. Juliet's heart thumped so wildly that she rested a hand on the car to calm the furious beating. Natasha's accident had hit the rewind button of her past, and there was nothing Juliet could do to stop the horror movie playing right before her eyes. 10 years ago, the strident sirens and the blinding lights had pulled her from the deep. Her head throbbed. "Did I lose consciousness? Where am I? Christophe, where is Christophe?" She turned toward the passenger seat, searching for him. Something was terribly wrong. The seat was empty. Short pain shot through her neck, and she screamed. "Someone is in the car," she heard a man call. As a rescuer cut through the roof to reach her, she relived the evening. Earlier, after dinner in Montmartre, Juliette had insisted on having a drink in the Quartier Latin. Christophe said it was late and he had an early meeting. They had already drunk too much, he added, and should go home. "We should have," Juliette remembered with precision. "Christophe was right. We drank 2 bottles of wine with our meal. We should have left the car and walked home. Fresh air would have sobered us." But she fought with Christophe, telling him he was no fun, that other men would love a woman ready to party. She rattled on until he gave up. Triumphant, she sat behind the wheel, insisting she hadn't drunk as much as he had. Christophe took the passenger seat. The Voie-sur-Berge was deserted and the river Seine shone like an endless satin ribbon. The Alfa Romeo slid on the smooth asphalt. Juliet rolled the window down and sang at the top of her lungs. "Maybe Christophe is right," she thought. "I'm a little drunk." She turned toward the fiancé. He was looking at the river. Legions of women found Christophe irresistible. Juliet realized how lucky she was that he wanted to marry her. In a burst of love, she reached for Christophe's leg, ready to apologize for a stupid attitude. At that exact second, a dark SUV, dashing from nowhere, faced her. Juliet screamed and slammed on the brakes. Her mistake was fatal. The SUV crashed into the Alfa Romeo that spun several times before heading backwards toward the river. The car stopped midway between earth and water. Someone screamed. Seconds later, Juliette realized the scream came from deep inside her. Someone responded to a cry of terror, and she closed her eyes, thinking everything would be fine. But Christophe was not, and she was to blame. Blood rushed against her temples, and although the soft, fragrant night that enveloped Juliette should have been comforting, she was suddenly blinded, as if someone flashed a light across her. A car had stopped, high beams on. A man and a woman rushed out. He hurried to the Honda Accord in a few long strides. "It's not our truck," he called. "It's not even a truck." "Thank God," the woman said, signing herself. "Is someone hurt?" "I don't see anyone," he said. "But the car is badly damaged." Then he spotted Juliette, standing a few feet away. "Are you hurt?" he asked, concern thickening his voice. "What happened?" the woman went on, her words trembling. "I don't know," Juliette said. Her heart battered the chest. This accident would ruin Natasha's young life the way one had ruined hers. She just couldn't let it happen. In a split second, a decision was made. "I drove by and saw the car." "Did you see the driver?" the woman asked, turning toward the Honda Accord. Juliette shook her head. "No." "It's a miracle if nobody was hurt," the woman says. "Traffic is light around here, but accidents are often fatal." "That's right," the man said. He narrowed his eyes as if trying to place Juliette. "Do you live around here?" "Around," Juliette said. The woman pointed to the jeep. "Good car for our local roads." "I favor smaller cars," Juliette said. Her voice sounded on the defensive, and she added in a softer tone, "But you are right, it's safer for our terrain." "Are you alone?" The man stepped ahead and faced Juliette. "Yes," she said, "I'm alone." The woman clasped her husband's sleeve. "Come on, Denis, we should go home. Natalie is not here." She turned to Juliette. "Our daughter ran away with our truck and..." "Sonia," Denis said, gently taking her hand and kissing her knuckles. But Sonia ignored him and went on. "She'll be 16 in a couple of months, doesn't have a license yet. We are so worried." "This lady has no idea who Natalie is," Denis said. He searched for Juliette's eyes, and her gaze met his. Juliette learned to disguise her emotions for such a long time that it was easy for her to hold his stare. Torn between telling the truth and protecting Natasha, she had no place to go but return to her own night of horror. Now, facing Denis, she knew from her own experience how terrorized Natasha must have been when she couldn't avoid the Honda Accord. There was no way she could tell her parents the truth, at least now. "What happened with your daughter?" she said. "We had a stupid argument about a math test," Denis explained. "She was upset and took off. I suspect she drove without any destination in mind. We were so afraid when we saw the wrecked car. In the dark, we thought it could be ours." "I'm sorry," Juliette said. "It's not your fault." Denis turned to Sonia. "Let's go home. Who knows? Natalie could be back." "If only you are right," Sonia said. "Goodbye, Miss Vauquier," Juliette said. Juliette Vauquier. Her name here didn't ring a bell. She left Paris when she finished her time behind bars, cleared a drunk driving record, got a driver's license back, and found a job in the U.S. "Good night, Juliette," Denis said. "I can call you Juliette. We're almost neighbors." He slipped a business card into her hand, in case you need anything. Juliette tried a smile that felt tight on her mouth. She glanced at the card while the couple walked to their car. "Denis Woods," she read, "architect." She heard Bowie's bark before seeing him. "Tout seul?" she asked, petting the dog's head. Bowie barked twice, and Juliette spotted Natasha's trim figure trailing a few feet behind. "Beautiful dog," Denis said with an appreciative nod. "Wasn't he with you when you stopped to see the car?" "Yes, he was. You said you were alone." "He loves to run," Juliette said. "A lab. You know how they are." She shrugged. "He took off, but I think he met someone." At the sound of boots crushing the dry grass, Sonia and Denis turned around. "Natalie!" they exclaimed in unison. They ran to their daughter. Natasha was holding a hat and had rolled up her sleeves. "Are you all right?" her mother asked. Her voice carried a relief, a worry, and above all, a love for her daughter. "Where is the truck?" her father said. "I'm sorry, I lost control and, oh my God, did you get into an accident too?" Natasha's mother embraced her daughter. Juliette stepped over. "Hi," she told Natasha, "I just met your parents. I was explaining how I was driving by and saw that wrecked car." Natasha's eyes widened. "Why are you lying?" Her voice was so small that Juliette thought her parents had not heard her. Bowie paced between the four people, whining. "What do you mean, lying?" Denis asked Natasha. He stepped between his daughter and Juliette, and her stomach dropped when she realized he was on his guard. "I'm the one who hit the car," Natasha said. "What are you talking about?" Denis looked from his daughter to Juliette. "I hit that car," Natasha repeated. "Oh, my God," her mother cried. "Where is the Tacoma?" Denis asked, looking around. "I panicked and left. I took the first driver on the way down." "My home," Juliette said. "So you two know each other?" Denis hooked a protective arm around his daughter's waist. "Why did you want to cover up for Natalie?" His voice had lost its warmth, and Juliette shivered. "Buying time," she said. "I was just buying time. What was I thinking? That I need to expiate twice for forgiveness? I won't ever forgive myself." Juliette looked at Natasha. She would remain Natasha to her. "Your daughter was so frightened," she told Denis. "I just wanted to help her." "Do you understand how serious the situation is?" Sonia asked, her voice charged with more panic than anger. "Natalie hit a car and left. We must call the police." "Sonia," Denis said, reaching for his wife, "calm down. I'm as upset as you are." He turned back to Juliette. "We have to call the police. They will want to see the Tacoma. Can we go to your home? Is it okay with you?" His voice was businesslike, but not devoid of kindness. Juliette nodded. "It will be all right." She looked for Bowie, but the dog had wandered off, and she spotted him digging a hole behind the Honda. "Bowie," she whistled. "Ici, viens, on rentre." But the dog did not even look up. Juliette assumed he was after a ground squirrel, but Bowie retrieved a piece of paper, yellowish and dusty after days spent in the sun and dirt. He held the note between his teeth, like a treasure he offered to Juliette. He waited until she took what looked like a parking stub. "Merci, mon chien," she said. She brushed the parking stub with her fingers and brought it closer to the lights of the jeep. Someone had written on the back of the stub. Juliette read aloud, "Hit a buck, I'm fine, car totaled." A name and an out-of-state phone number followed. Natasha crashed into a red car. Sonia and Denis each wrapped one arm around their daughter's shoulders. She looked even younger now that her parents were in charge. When the meaning of the note registered, Natasha's face showed an equal mix of stupefaction and relief. She brushed her hand against her forehead. "I hit an already wrecked car," she said. Her throaty sound escaped her. It could have been a laugh or a cry. Her mother hugged her and whispered inaudible but soothing words in her ear. Denis, hands in his pockets, poked the ground with his boot. "It's so dark and late," Juliette told him. "Neither your daughter nor your wife can drive the Tacoma back home. They're both too upset." She turned toward him, and although she couldn't see his face, she saw how attentively he listened to her. His silence encouraged her. "Why don't you stay over for the night?" "To be honest," Denis said with a quick laugh, "I feel drained. And you are right, it's probably safer for all of us." Juliette nodded. "Then follow me." She opened the passenger door for Bowie. "Jump in," she said. "We are going home." She maneuvered the jeep from the side of the road and drove away. In a rearview mirror, the beams of Denis' headlights glowed. Juliet had never hosted guests at her house, and some unsettled excitement grew inside her. She envisioned the four of them sharing a late dinner and realized with surprise that even the worst pain never lasts. Bowie stirred beside her. "We'll have company, mon chien," she said. Bowie brought his head to a thigh and sighed. "Tomorrow will be a good day." Juliet pulled in the driveway and parked. The infinite sky stretched above her home. Stars had finally appeared, as they do each night. While on Earth, people busied themselves with ordinary or tragic tasks of life. Bowie yawned. He jumped out of the jeep and led Juliet to the front porch. She turned at the sound of footsteps behind her. "Hey," Natasha said in a soft voice. "Hey," Juliet said. She unlocked the door and gently led Natasha into the foyer. "Welcome to my home."
Was Evelyn O'Lang reading Welcome Home. From the beginning, we realize that Juliet, the main character in the story, is an immigrant from France who lives by herself up in the mountains with her buddy, a chocolate-colored lab named Bowie, in a sort of self-imposed isolation because we suspect she still feels guilty about a rather serious mistake she made back in her home country. And lo and behold, here comes a pickup truck. It's driven by a young girl named Natasha, who tells her that she thinks she's killed somebody in a traffic accident. Well, they drive back to the scene of the accident and sure enough find the wrecked car. But then, nobody's around. Soon, Natasha's parents show up, and when they find out what happened, they too become extremely troubled about what's going to be next for their daughter. Not to worry, because here comes Bowie, Juliet's loyal lab, who saves the day when he shows up with a note he dug up right by the wrecked car. It was obviously written by the damaged vehicle's owner and read, "Hit a buck. I'm fine. Car totaled." So what really happened is that Natasha hit an already wrecked car whose owner had left. Well, everybody is mightily relieved. But even though this story has a happy ending, surely there is a lesson to be learned, especially by Natasha. Don't mess around with your cell phone while you're driving. Folks, Evelyn O'Lang has been on our show before. She won first place in the Foster City Writing Contest, and two of her stories for children are currently under contract for publication with Ladybug and Spider magazines. Thank you, Evelyn O'Lang, for that fine story tonight. And so we come to the end of another edition of Valley Writers Read. Thank you for listening. Now, if you would like to listen to tonight's or any other Valley Writers Read program again, just get online at kvpr.org and click on to Valley Writers Read. Next week, our writer will be Liza Wieland. In the meantime, this is your host, Franz Weinschenk, wishing you and yours a great life story until we meet again. Good night.
Valley Writers Read is a production of Valley Public Radio, produced by Don Weaver and Franz Weinschenk. Please join us again next Wednesday at 7 p.m. for another edition of Valley Writers Read.